This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, there are reports Niger's coup leaders threatened to kill ousted president if outside military forces try to oust them. And Malawi is seeking donations to feed more than 50,000 refugees facing shortages. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. West African leaders ordered the activation of the regional group standby force following a coup last month in Niger. A statement put out by Omar Aliou Touré, president of the Commission of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, said the force should be deployed to restore constitutional order in the Republic of Niger. Niger's junta told a top U.S. diplomat that they would kill deposed President Mohamed Bazoum if neighboring countries tried to intervene militarily to restore his rule, according to two Western officials who spoke to the Associated Press. Representatives of the junta told U.S. Under Secretary of State Victoria Nuland of the threat to Bazoum during her visit to the country this week. A Western military official told AP, speaking on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the situation. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres earlier voiced concern about Bazoum and his family after his party reported they were being detained without electricity or running water and had gone days without fresh food. This past hour, the president of Ivory Coast, Alassane Ouattara, spoke to reporters minutes after ECOWAS leaders met in Abuja. Here is what he had to say. We will be back with the Ouattara comment later. That was refusing to give in to the demands. They end their coup. The military leaders named a new government, according to a decree read out on national television today. Prime Minister Ali Mahamane Lamine Zani will lead the 21-member administration with generals from the new military governing council heading the defense and interior ministries. Malawi is seeking donations to feed more than 50,000 refugees facing shortages at the country's only refugee camp. Government officials say the camp's food stock is expected to be depleted by December. The appeal comes after the World Food Program last month cut by half the food rations for the refugees because of funding problems. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
The refugees at the Dzaleka refugee camp say the food shortage has become worse, largely because of the ongoing forcible relocations of refugees who are staying outside the camp. Burundian refugee Nibigira Goreth is a community leader at the Dzaleka refugee camp.
Actually, you see that now we are so many in the camp because of these people from outside of the camp, the people who were in the town. So now all of them are here, lying on the food ration. Yeah, it's a big problem that we have now.
The Malawi government started relocating refugees and asylum seekers in June in adherence to its encampment policy that restricts the refugees to living and operating within camp premises. Malawian officials say more than 2,000 of the targeted 8,000 refugees have been relocated to the camp. Last month, the World Food Program cut food rations for the refugees by one half because of funding problems, and it appealed for $6.3 million to meet the food needs for the refugees up to June of next year. Malawi Homeland Security Minister Kenneth Kalingoma told a press conference Wednesday the action has put the government in an awkward situation.
And that has an effect on our part because it will now be like the burden of the government. The ration that we have or the capacity that we have will end up to December. So we need to find means and modalities to help us so that we can lobby donors, support us, so that we are able to feed our people.
Dzaleka is home to upwards of 50,000 refugees, mainly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Ethiopia, and Somalia. However, the food shortage at the refugee camp is forcing some of the relocated refugees to return to areas outside the camp. Lawmaker Victor Musoa told the Malawi Parliament Wednesday that many relocated refugees have returned to his area.
All the Burundians in my community are back, and the majority of them are Seventh-day Adventists. I'm happy to declare that I go to church with them, and they are contributing at church. So maybe we need to look at another way of solving this.
Another lawmaker, Samir Suleiman, said it would be proper if Malawi allowed those refugees who have long stayed outside the camp to remain in place wherever they are.
For so long, we have accommodated them, and their kids don't know any other home but Malawi. I think it would be inhumane to remove these refugees. Let's consider we incorporate these ones in the society. We have already done that. That's my view.
In a statement Tuesday, though, Malawi's Homeland Security Ministry gave the refugees who have left the camp and returned outside the camp 7 days to relocate to the camp or risk having their refugee status revoked. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And in more news from Niger, as we reported earlier, West African leaders have ordered the activation of ECOWAS's standby force following a coup last month in Niger. But Niger's junta told the top U.S. diplomat that they would kill deposed President Mohamed Bazoum if neighboring countries try to intervene militarily. And UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres earlier has also voiced concern about Bazoum and his family. This past hour, the president of Ivory Coast, Alassane Ouattara, spoke to reporters minutes after ECOWAS leaders met in Abuja. Here is what he had to say.
ECOWAS has intervened in the past in Liberia, in Sierra Leone, recently in Gambia, in Guinea-Bissau. And today we have a similar situation in Niger. I'd like to say that ECOWAS cannot accept this. This is not a matter of Nigeria against Niger, not at all. The decision that we have made today, and I hope it will be implemented immediately, is a decision of ECOWAS. All the head of states think that we have tried dialogue with the putsch of Niger. We have sent delegation, high personalities like former President Abu Salami Abubakar, the Sultan of Sokoto, the Emir également, former Governor Sanusi, my friend, and many others, personalities in this important country, to talk to the people of Niger. But they're keeping President Bazoum as a hostage. I personally consider this as a terrorist act.
That was Alassane Ouattara, president of Ivory Coast. Protests over insecurity in Mali's Bandiagara region, which has seen recent jihadist attacks, escalated yesterday, leaving several people injured, according to government sources. The demonstrations had gone off peacefully and people were going home when a group attacked police, a government source told the French news agency AFP, on condition of anonymity. Officers responded with tear gas and some protesters turned more violent. The source said at least 7 were injured, including 1 seriously, adding that the situation was now under control. One resident who spoke to AFP by phone said the situation remained very tense. 17 people, including 5 traditional hunters, were killed last weekend in 2 attacks attributed to jihadists. The protesters were denouncing what they said was the inaction of the armed forces and insecurity in the region. Mali is led by a junta that seized power in 2020 and has turned away from former colonial power France and towards Russia, both politically and militarily. Human Rights Watch says the Egyptian government is limiting electricity use with daily power cutbacks nationwide, putting people's economic and social rights at risk. The rights organization said the cuts appear to last longer in rural areas, which have higher poverty rates and have left many people without power amid soaring temperatures, hindering their ability to work. Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, discussed the situation with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
If you remember, the 2011 revolution took place mainly in urban areas. So the city can do a lot of pressure on government. That's why they prefer to address and favor the city over the village. Of course, even in urban areas, despite that comparatively with rural areas, they are also complaining, especially if you have business and it is unpredictable. And the way that the government had been giving messages regarding this issue, they didn't tell when it will be cut. And then later on, they began to have a schedule. And then also said that this schedule is no longer valid and we are solving the problem. And some areas, you know, say that there's no more power cuts as in the past. But this is a crisis that took place at a very hot time. You know, the weather in Egypt was too hot. And so the people felt it more than any time. And it had also political repercussions, people wondering why this happened despite all this money that went to infrastructure and gas and electricity.
Prime Minister Mustafa Madbouly said that the cuts, which began on July 22nd, following a week of sudden blackouts, are to reduce pressure on the country's electricity infrastructure due to increased demand. However, the electricity minister told local media that electricity consumption in Egypt did not exceed potential production capacity. What is the real reason behind this? After investing billions of dollars, as you said, in electricity projects.
As you know, Egypt is providing power to Libya, to Jordan. We have extra power to provide to a lot of countries. But what is the problem now? The problem is financial. The government is facing a very severe shortage of foreign currency. If they wanted more gas, they could get favorable prices from Eni, which is another partner of Egypt in the gas field in the East Mediterranean. They could also buy extra gas from Israel. But because of the shortage of dollar, they were not able to do that. But it looks like it is a financial issue. As we have seen, the government is suffering from financial shortages in several sectors, not only the gas and electricity sector.
The electricity problem came at a time of record high prices and inflation. What is the Egyptian public reaction as Egyptians fear another devaluation of the Egyptian currency?
As you know, there was always a social contract between the Egyptian government since Nasser and the people. You don't meddle into politics or freedom of expression in return for providing you with cheap public service and bread and oil and food, everything like that. This social contract is being broken. And that's why people began to complain about the system and the regime. And Sisi, especially next year, is a 2024 presidential election. And so it comes at a very difficult time. Take into consideration that the social forces that supported Sisi are now re-examining their position, but they don't have an alternative. So, for example, you have 12 million people who are senior citizens. They lived on a very small pension, and the money they invested usually in banks. Now, with the devaluation, the economic condition had extremely declined. And so this group is no longer happy with Sisi and not happy with the government. But at the same time, they don't know who is the alternative and can the alternative try to solve the economic problem for them or not.
That was Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Representatives of rainforest nations in Africa and Southeast Asia have joined a summit of Amazon countries in Brazil to begin charting a common course to preserve the ecologically diverse regions that are crucial in countering climate change. On Tuesday, leaders and ministers from 8 Amazonian nations signed a declaration that laid out plans to drive economic development in their countries while preventing the Amazon's ongoing demise from reaching a point of no return. Joining the summit yesterday were the presidents of the Republic of Congo and the Democratic Republic of Congo, an emissary from Indonesia's president, and France's ambassador to Brazil, representing the Amazonian territory of French Guiana. Several environmental groups had expressed frustration with Tuesday's joint declaration, saying it was largely a compilation of good intentions with little in the way of concrete goals and time frames. Some scientists say that when 20% to 25% of the forest is destroyed, rainfall will dramatically decline, transforming more than half of the rainforest to tropical savanna with immense biodiversity loss. South African government sources have told VOA they're pushing for the expulsion of the United States ambassador to Pretoria. In May, Ruben Brigati accused the administration of President Cyril Ramaphosa of providing Russia with weapons for use in Ukraine. But a judge appointed by Ramaphosa to investigate the claims has found that South Africa did not supply any war material to Moscow. Instead, says the judge, it was Russia that provided guns and bullets to South Africa for its special forces to use against insurgents in northern Mozambique. Darren Taylor reports.
International relations analyst and former U.S. diplomat to several African countries, Brooks Spector, says it's possible Pretoria just wants a formal apology from Brigati and from Washington. But he says that'll only happen when and if the U.S. government acknowledges its intelligence was wrong and that South Africa indeed did not provide arms to Russia last December. That's when, according to American intelligence reports, a sanctioned Russian vessel, the Lady R, was loaded with weapons and ammunition destined for Ukraine at a naval base near Cape Town.
Remember, too, that the report on the Lady R, none of it's been made public. There have been some leaks saying that, yes, they received weapons that had been ordered previously, and it was then loaded with food bound for Russia. And I'm scratching my head a little bit trying to figure out why in the world they loaded food onto it in a naval base. Until such time as it is publicly explained what was found, we're still in a bit of a black box on this one. We don't really know.
Presidential spokesman Vincent Magwenya says Ramaphosa is still studying the judge's report. After that, he says the president will decide what, if anything, to release publicly, since much of the report concerns state security. International relations spokesman for the governing African National Congress, Obed Bapela, says no matter what the facts are, Brigati acted improperly, and the government can no longer trust him.
When such a matter arises by any ambassador who is accredited to South Africa, there's what we call diplomatic channels. The ambassador, Brigati, did not use those diplomatic channels. He might have apologized for raising it in a RAN platform. He knows this protocol arrangement that exists as a global phenomenon. He should have then gone to that, and so that the Minister of International Relations in South Africa and her counterpart in the U.S. can then engage on the matter and find a diplomatic channel of raising and attending and investigating the matter until there's a conclusive evidence on the matter.
If Pretoria keeps its report secret, says Spector, Washington would be well within its rights to stand by its intelligence and to refuse to apologize or recall its ambassador. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
UNICEF has confirmed that most migrants on a boat that recently capsized off the coast of Italy, killing an estimated 41 people, have traveled from African countries that included Guinea, Mali, Senegal, and Ivory Coast. In another shipwreck this past weekend in the Mediterranean, a pregnant mother and 18-month-old child from Africa were among those who died off the coast of Lampedusa, Italy. UNICEF country coordinator for the national response in Italy, Nicola dell'Archiperti, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that around 30 people are still missing. He also describes what should be done to prevent recurrences of such tragedies.
What we heard from the survivors of the shipwreck is that a number of people were on board, about 45 of them. They left from Sfax on Thursday or Friday last week. During their journey, somewhere in the Mediterranean, we don't know the exact location, the ship capsized. And the survivors saw the other people traveling with them progressively sink in the sea. They managed to remain afloat, and apparently they have found an abandoned iron barge until they've been rescued by a cargo ship that was passing by and subsequently disembarked with the help of the Coast Guard in Lampedusa.
UNICEF says a young child and a pregnant mother from Africa were among the victims. Is that correct?
Well, that's actually, sadly, the outcome of another shipwreck that took place also over the weekend. Unfortunately, we've seen this route of the Central Mediterranean putting in danger so many lives, and we have seen so many shipwrecks taking place over the years. Only this year, at least 289 children lost their lives or have gone missing trying to get to Italy from the southern part of the Mediterranean. What we know is that this trend has continued steadily, if not increased, which also shows that people are taking huge risks. And this means they're really facing really tough hardship at home if they're ready to take such a terrible risk to come all the way.
If that's the case and people are continuing to take these big risks, risk their lives to get over to the European continent, what are you advising at least people to do that are coming from Africa?
Well, there is no way around. Either we have safe legal pathways established so that migrants have a safe option to travel, and at the same time we have stronger search and rescue operations at sea, or we will keep seeing children dying.
And how is that going to happen? Is that up to the governments of Europe?
We are advocating for this on governments, on the European Union, and we hope action will be taken as soon as possible.
Otherwise, people are going to continue to die.
Exactly.
Is there anything you wanted to add that I didn't ask you that you feel is important to mention?
Yeah, I'd like to say that what we know is that more than 70% of the children arriving are unaccompanied, are separated from their parents. They're traveling alone. So many of them have spent months traveling, facing sexual exploitation, all sorts of abuse and violence. What we have to ensure is that when they arrive, we need to provide them with adequate reception condition. We are there with our team to listen to them and also to refer them to the appropriate services. What we are asking is that as soon as possible, they are transferred from Lampedusa towards more suitable reception facilities and to have full access to the health services.
That is UNICEF country coordinator for the national response in Italy, Nicola dell'Archiperti. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Damme, today from Rome. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.